Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
It's the Police Officers Association of Michigan podcast radio show, recorded live from our studios in Redford, Michigan. HOME is a full-service labor organization formed to provide every labor-related service from negotiations, grievance processing, legal and legislative representation to Act 312 arbitrations.
I remember hearing his story the first time in May of 2002 when he... And as I recall, you were standing at the copier, you work your 18-hour shift or whatever it is. Isn't it 18s you guys were working,
yep,
or 20s?
18.
Standing at the copy machine, put in his 18 hours, and somebody comes down and says, "Hey, Joe, they need you to a trade center. A plane ran into it." And he's like, "Yeah, get out of here. You know, I put my time in. Find somebody else. You know, it's probably some Cessna 120 that ran into it, some drunken pilot." And boy, they needed you there that day. And I know you were there for a long time after, and Joe's become a good friend. Came back, visited us in 06, 5 years after the terrorist attack, and I pledged that day that we were going to try to find him for the 10th anniversary, and I'm so glad to know that he retired in 2008, right?
Yep.
And is now out giving classes and teaching on evidence collection, I assume, and things like that, which you certainly became an expert that day. If you hadn't been already. So we're very fortunate to have Joe here. He's become a good friend of the POAM. He's going to be with us here staying the night too, right?
Yes.
So take the time to take a few minutes to see Joe, but please join me in welcoming Joe Blosis.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Good afternoon. Can everyone hear? We're all right. Well, let me start things off by saying, one, Jimmy, thank you very, very much for reaching out for me once again. I was absolutely thrilled when I heard Linda Cook was trying to track me down, and it ended up my numbers got lost in a shuffle, and she called my office, and I'm in constant contact with my office regularly, and they called me up right away, and probably you still had Linda on the line, and they won't give out your home numbers and your cell numbers. I'm sure it's like that here as well. And they said that there's some woman looking for you from Michigan. And then I says, "It's fine. Tell her I'll call her in a minute. Give me your contact number." So Jim and the staff of POM, thank you very, very much. It's an honor. It was an honor back in 2002 in May. It was an honor back in 2006. And I'm really honored and humbled to be back to give a 10-year perspective, so to speak. So Jim and Linda, thank you very, very much. You guys out here, you're one of the reasons that I am back. And I lecture regularly. And for people there that see me speak before, and I probably met quite a few of you in different conferences and stuff like that, I'm kind of like your unorthodox speaker. Podiums and I don't get along. I like to work the floor, so I'm going to start roaming around. We're going to take the next hour, maybe hour and a half, a little bit on the slow side. And I had a few weeks now to think about exactly what did I want to present. And I came up with a little scenario that was, Jim said, "Joe, go for it." What I did was, I'm going to show a DVD, and I'll explain a little bit more about that in a few moments. And then after the DVD, I'm going to show you as a city where we are right now, as far as the construction, the site plans, what's planned, the openings, and what's behind it all, so to speak. But before I jump into that, I know Tim just stepped out, and it's the first time I really met Tim for any length of time. I mean, we've been in other functions. We just found out, you know, we had a lot in common through the 9/11 experience, and we were speaking at different venues, but our paths never really crossed. But unfortunately, Tim just had to step out. But from the bottom of my heart, I don't know exactly what he went through, because I was not inside the towers like him. I was outside the tower, right on the plaza area. But I can tell you that Tim spoke from his heart. Tim is a straight shooter, and here he is in the back now. Tim, I was just speaking about you, so maybe your ears were ringing. And I just wanted to say that Tim spoke literally from his heart. I can sense that as a lecturer. He gave you a perspective that was made me feel like this just happened yesterday. And from the bottom of my heart, I mean, one of my sayings back with my friends, he's my brother, my new brother from another mother, and my heart goes out to him. My heart condolences go out to his fellow firemen that were killed that day. And Tim and I used the same verbiage on that. That was the world's largest homicide. These individuals were murdered, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. So again, I commend Tim. And Tig, the only thing that I'm a little disappointed is you put me in a spot where it's a tough act to follow. I'll tell you that. But I'll try my best. First up, let me just go in just a little bit about my background, so to speak. I know quite a few of you guys who are a refresher and a lot of new faces in the attendance here, too. First thing we got to look at is my name, Joe Blosis. What the hell is this guy? Well, I'm that famous guy. I know you probably heard this before, but I'm that famous guy, especially we're all in law enforcement. I'm world famous. In law enforcement, you have your unidentified, Jane Doe's, John Doe's. You just met the infamous Joe Blow, and that's how you're going to remember me from this point on. As Tig said, I retired in April of 2008. I had almost 29 years of service with the City of New York and the NYPD. Love of my life was forensic investigations. I'm a crime scene guy. I was in crime scene almost 13 and a half years. The rest of that time I was working in the police crime lab, doing special projects and so forth and so on. Bottom line is, crime scene is kind of my forte. And unfortunately, on this particular day back in 10 years ago, no one expected this. No one. No one was prepared for this. Tim's department does drills. We do drills. No one was prepared for this. So bottom line is we had to do what we felt was best at that second. You do what was best. But I can tell you, before I lose my train of thought on this, the one thing that will stand out, and Tim will definitely agree with me, the morning of this horrific act, there was no New York City Fire Department. There was no New York City Police Department. Back then, we were all one. Didn't matter what uniform, what band, it didn't matter. We were all one. We were on the fire trucks, I remember, and Tim, I'm sure you were well, when the fires started spreading on the streets, we had over 1,000 pieces of emergency equipment in that area. That going to go up in flames. The streets were going on fire. Working with firemen and cops, we got to get the rescue equipment off these trucks, oxygen tanks, tools, whatever we can get off of our vehicles. We got to get them off and throw them in buildings, and that's what we did. But we worked hand in hand. Once the towers went down, the dust settled, and I'll get into that in more detail later on. But once the dust settled, I mean, it was a search and rescue, but it was pretty evident that you either made it out or you didn't make it out. And from that point on, we were one, and it lasted that through the entire investigation, which concluded, as you'll see in a few moments, in May of 2002. And to this day, my words back, years back, were never forget. Never forget as a nation what we went through. Never forget about the people that died on that day. And unfortunately, I think a lot of us, especially in Washington, D.C., and in your governmental offices, have forgotten. And we can't ever, ever forget, because this is going to end up happening again. But again, I'll get into that in a few more moments. Bottom line, what am I doing since I'm retiring? Jim already told you. I'm a lecturer. Everyone's familiar with the International Association of Chiefs of Police. I'm your crime scene liaison, crime scene instructor for IACP. I also work for the United States Department of State's ATA program, Anti-Terrorism Assessment Program, Terror-Related Crime Scenes. I also work for the largest DNA company in the world. They're based out of 160 countries. I'm their law enforcement liaison, and I go and I teach the evidence collection teams, crime scene units, evidence collectors within those departments that submit to the laboratories, that submit to the DNA laboratories. I train them on the recognition, detection, collection, packaging of DNA. All in all, I travel about once or twice a month. Last week, I was in Columbia, South Carolina. And the bottom line is, just like you, I'm a cop. You're a cop when you're working. You're a cop when you're off duty. You're a cop when you retire. And we'll all be cops when we die. I love cops. I love hanging with yous. And that's why I could never, ever say no to Tiggy. I had to come. Bottom line, enough said on me. Let's get going over here. Disclaimers. Through my years, sometimes I had to worry about disclaimers. But bottom line is, I'm no longer working for the NYPD. So basically, it's my opinions on this, what went on. I'm not here as a representative per se. And taking us to the morning of 9/11. I use this picture up here because picture speaks a thousand words. And with Tim's description, I don't even have to say anything more on what happened this particular morning. But on the bottom, as you can see, is we have our patches. These patches are indicative of every agency that lost personnel in this homicide. So we had the NYPD, New York Fire Department, Emergency Medical Services, Port Authority, Court Systems, FBI, Customs. I had the pleasure a few months back of working with testimonial films. And what it was is, and I just briefly told Tim the story what happened on this too. When I was in an active squad sergeant in the PD, all sorts of TV companies wanted to do documentaries and movies and all this other stuff. My department frowns on that stuff. And however, there was pressure put on while I was active that they gave the okay for a documentary to be done. And the reason being is because you never heard of the law enforcement perspective of what happened. I can never, ever, ever minimize the tragic loss of our firefighters, 343. But NYPD lost 23, Port Authority lost 37. And today what I'd like to do is give you a little perspective from a law enforcement perspective on what we went through. But going back while I was active, through our Deputy Commissioner of Public Information, it was approved that we could do the filming. The morning of the filming, matter of fact, I was the first to be interviewed. The department pulled the plug, and he said, no good, no more. And the project never went through. So what happened was, they were pretty persistent because they followed us. And as soon as they realized that the key players that they want to interview were now all retired, they reached out to us. And I agreed. And I also agreed that I wanted compensation. Not for Joe Blow, but I said, whatever monies you would pay to do another documentary on whatever, I said, I'll get my friends involved if you donate it back to the Widows and Orphans Fund of our Detectives Endowments Association. So they agreed, and then we went together. And bottom line is, this video that I'm going to show you now, this DVD, is supposedly going to air around September, give or take a week before, a week after. It's going to be on Discovery Channel. It was viewed not too long ago in England. I believe 3 to 4 million people viewed it in England, and supposedly the reviews were very positive. So with that, their Discovery Channel, True TV, whoever it is, supposedly is going to run it here in the States. And what we'll give you is, it will give you a very good perspective on what Tim described to you earlier on. It's going to recap what happened at 9/11. But when we get into the narration and the interviews, it's going to be from a forensic perspective. It will be crime scene investigators, it'll be the medical examiner's personnel, and we do have some victims' families in here as well. And then at the conclusion of the video, I'm going to jump back onto my PowerPoint, And I'm going to go through some slides, some of them very quickly, others a little more slowly. But by the time you leave here, you'll all have a very, very good perspective of what happened 10 years ago and what's going on today.
Due to copyright considerations, the video was not able to be included in this podcast, but we're going to take a break and put in some commercials for sponsorships of the Police Officers Association of Michigan annual conference in Grand Rapids, and then we'll continue on with Joe's presentation.
This is kind of a funny story.
It's Gertie, ABC Warehouse founder, save you money guru, and storyteller of old.
You know, I've been saving people money on appliances and electronics for as long as I can remember.
Probably even before then.
And when you save money, you always sleep better at night. But when me and the missus went out to look for a new mattress, we simply couldn't find a good deal. Then it hit me.
Like a ton of high-priced mattresses.
People deserve high-quality, premium mattresses at prices they can afford. And to me, that means getting one at the closest thing to wholesale.
Stop counting those sheep and start counting the savings.
Hey, I was going to use that one. You stole my sheep savings line. But rest assured, nobody will beat ABC on a mattress deal.
Introducing premium mattresses now at ABC Warehouse. All sizes, all comfort levels. This week only, get 50% off, plus free delivery and removal of your old bedding. Take 12 months to pay and get an extra $100 off. Even sale prices on purchases of $6.97 or more. ABC Warehouse, the closest thing to wholesale.
Hi, this is Matt LaFontaine from LaFontaine Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Saline. And now during Minivan Month, we just announced a 2011 Ram Quad Cab 4x4 lease from $199 a month. That's just $49 a week or less, now through May 31st. Come to LaFontaine Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Saline, or visit us on the web at thefamilydeal.com. Call 855-LaFontaine. Offer ends May 31st.
All right. It still gets me when you see all this. And again, from this was a focus on the crime scene unit per se. I mean, obviously, in my unit, we have 70 fellow detectives that we split between two shifts. I had the day shift. My other boss had the night shift. So we were doing 14, 16-hour days, overlapping tours and stuff. But the thousands of cops that were involved. New York City back then, we had nearly 40,000 uniformed members. The fire department was fully staffed back then. They had literally thousands of personnel on site each day. And again, we did it day by day, hour by hour. There's nothing written in books on how to proceed, no protocols, no nothing. But all said and done is I know we gave every ounce of strength that we had, and we gave closure to quite a few families, which that I'm very, very grateful for. Before I actually leave the video, just this was probably 99% accurate. You know, anytime they do documentaries, they edit things, and sometimes when they edit, they end up changing a few scenarios. I'll go back to one of my good friends, Hal Sherman, that recovered the pilot's chair. They ended up editing when Hal was with a team member. And you didn't hear on the documentary, but the team member was a military person. And he was from the Air Force. He was a pilot. So he was very, very familiar with aircraft equipment, and we needed that because some of these parts were so damn small, we didn't know what was going on. So we had military personnel to assist us in. So when Hal got to that chair, that's when the military guy says, let me break it to you this way, Hal. Us as pilots, we have better chairs than you do in coach. That's how I know that this is the pilot's chair. So that was number one. And number two, which means really nothing on my part, but It did come out. I forgot all about that flat tire until literally when we did this filming about 6 months ago. And then I remembered that when we left the office, we had a flat tire, gave it one of those, oh shit, bring it to Tony right around the block, and he knew what was going on because it's all over the TV. He had two guys change that flat within 30 seconds, and we were on our way. And we got there when both towers, the first tower came down and then subsequently the second tower. But I was out on the perimeter. Wasn't like Tim inside the buildings again. I was literally like right on the perimeter outside of Liberty Street, which is outside that plaza. Shia Rabowski is now retired from the OCME's office, and Shia did a fantastic job from a DNA forensics perspective. If you can imagine the databases that had to be built and what went into this, getting knowns and compared to the unknown samples, it's a very, very tremendous task. But all said and done, the additional identification of victims goes on today. There are remains still being tested. DNA technology changes on a regular basis. And with the more advanced technology, the smaller cell size, so to speak, we can get DNA now from 10 skin cells that you can't even see. So hopefully more closure for additional families will be in the future. I can't give you the number, but I will tell you probably about half is still unidentified. Many of my friends, and I'm sure as Tim's, they literally vaporized. A dear friend of mine from the Port Authority, Tony Infante, never recovered. Poof, gone. Nothing. Any questions on 10 years ago? Because right now what I'm going to do is, real quickly, I'll bring you up to speed. And Tim planted the seed for me very well with this next segment coming up. May 1st, a few weeks back, right? We're still in May. 3 weeks ago, music to my ears when this first came across. Like Tim, we all thought it was Gaddafi. Thought Gaddafi, they got him, or he fled the country or whatever. But it took 9 years, 19 days for justice to have been served. Thank our team, SEAL 6. And no, this is not the photo. I know you're probably looking at it, but it does make a pretty damn good picture, so I threw it in here. Right after it happened, I got emails saying, here he is and all this other stuff. So I'm sure some of you saw it as well. But from bottom of my heart, these service guys, my God, what we have behind us that we don't even know, like intel of what's going on and what our servicemen and women do for us each and every day blows my mind. And you have no idea what they do. And these guys here, what a job they did. President Obama came out that Sunday evening, what, around 10 o'clock at night, I guess it was. And bottom line, he sums it up tonight. Let us to think back to the sense of unity we had after 9/11. Today's achievement is a testament to the greatness of our nation. America can do whatever we set our mind to do. And we pledged back then we were going to get them, and we finally ended up getting them. Next on the hit list, this is who's supposedly the heir apparent to Osama, and we'll see what happens with Amin. Human toll, close to 3,000 people were murdered in the city of New York. And again, we had 343 firefighters, 37 Port Authority police officers, 23 New York City police officers. Since our troops went to war, we had 1,485 troops have been killed in Afghanistan as of April 28th. 2,752 people perished in the World Trade Center itself. I can't stand talking about money. We all like money, like to have some extra cash in our pockets. But it all came down to money. And back then, I remember, even when we were working on the site there, after it was all cleared up and everything, it took, in essence, 8 years to come up with a plan, like, what's going to be doing on this site? And it got into a war over money. So all the developers and architects and politicians that all got involved, they can never decide what was going to go on. But I'm going to show you figures on how much money we're talking about. But bottom line, to New York City, we're looking at about almost $94 billion impact. Cost over $659 million just to clean up Ground Zero. Terrorism is never, ever, ever going away. 10 years ago, our lives changed forever. And the senior guys in here, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And we have a lot of younger guys in here. 10 years ago, you were probably in high school, middle school, high school. It's a new generation. I'm telling you now, I didn't come here to do an intel lecture, so to speak. But I will tell you, as I said 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and today, and I'll tell you tomorrow, next week, 10 years from now, Lord willing, we're going to get hit again. Just a matter of where and when. We are going to get hit again. How they're going to come at us is the million-dollar question. I will tell you that our counterterrorism units that are throughout the country, I could speak on New York, we have over 1,000 detectives. 1,000 detectives assigned to the counterterrorism unit. Our intelligent division in counterterrorism, along with the other agencies spread out across the United States, along with our military, are doing a fantastic job on the intel side. And some of the stuff I'm going to go through with you, I'll show you exactly what we've been getting, but they have made tremendous inroads in taking care of Al-Qaeda training camps. Those Al-Qaeda training camps, forget about the ones in the Middle East where the majority of them got trained. We had them here in the United States. Here in our own country, they were blocks away from ground zero, they were recruiting. And Tim, thank you for bringing up the mosque, because I won't go into that again. But in close proximity where they wanted to build that mosque, in another mosque, they were recruiting members to join Al-Qaeda. And people, the press, they don't put that out. That's another topic for another day, but that's the truth. I'm a straight shooter. I tell you the way it is. And bottom line is, we have done, our men and women have done a great job on these, knocking out these training camps worldwide. But since 9/11, we've had probably close to 12 other attacks. Some happened, some did not. You probably never even heard of them. And I'm going to bring some of them up with you right now. A year ago, May 2nd, you recall the Times Square vehicle improvised explosives device, a car bomb, was left in Times Square. Picture speaks a thousand words. Saturday evening, Times Square. Thousands of people, theater district, restaurants, Broadway, hotels, Marriott, the whole nine yards. Well, this car is a 1993 Nissan Pathfinder. And we got him on security cameras coming in, and he left the car. He ignited what he believed was the device inside the car, left, and a little child noticed some smoke, went up to a mounted cop, let the mounted cop know about it. Mounted cop goes over, sees smokes, puts it over the radio, fired, responds, ba ba ba. Next thing they realize, we got something here. Bomb squad's notified, and I'm going to take you through that. Our city right now is Big Brother is watching. And these cameras are strategically placed throughout the vast majority of Manhattan. And it's for a very, very good reason. And cameras, civil libertarians don't want these. We don't want too bad. They're going up. And right now, this is how we're covering Manhattan. This is a buddy of mine, Ray Clare, first grade detective in the bomb squad. When he approached this vehicle, it was one of his oh shit moments, because at first they're thinking, nah, probably not. When he gets inside the car, I'm going to show you what he ended up finding inside that car. But my first question to you is out here is, how do you recall the press portraying the suspect that was apprehended on that? What did they say about this guy? Anybody? Acted alone is one, and that he was nuts. I mean, he was crazy. Guy wasn't very smart. He was an idiot, a lone wolf idiot, totally contrary to the truth. He was trained in the Middle East on how to put together a comm bomb. And let's look what he did. This idiot that did not know what he was doing ended up utilizing, we got any bomb techs in here? Because you can probably help me out if I use wrong terminology, but bottom line is, he utilized two clocks as timing devices. One of them happened to have Arabic writing on it. He had two 5-gallon full containers of gasoline. Also hooked up are 3 20-gallon propane tanks. He had a slew of M88s, not, you know, M80 firecrackers. These are M88s strategically placed inside the vehicle because once they get the ignition, they flare up. And his claim to fame was there was a large cardboard box that was concealing a gun locker containing 250 pounds of fertilizer and 120 M88s. And he had it all electrically wired. Is this an idiot? Well schooled. Thank God he used the wrong fertilizer. And when he ended up getting them was, he ended up saying, I was trained to do it this way. And basically, if he went the other way, which I don't even want to say, but you can go to the store and buy it. If he used that, they're estimating it would have been probably about 150 dead in Times Square. Car bomb did not go off, obviously. That night, from a patrol perspective, law enforcement perspective, yes, we got an active bomb investigation going on. But what do you have to do in that immediate area? Evacuate. You got to evacuate the Marriott, the theaters, all the restaurants. Thousands and thousands of people had to get out of there. Up the block. Anybody in the National Academy with the FBI? FBI National Academy came in for the weekend, and they had about 30 partying NA grads up in Manhattan for a great time. One block away, they had to evacuate. Can you imagine being in that party that night? Things are going full tilt. Got to get out of here because we got a car bomb parked right up the block. Fazil Shahzad, in June, they are brought up, raised to believe this is what should be done in the world. I'm a martyr. This guy didn't even want a trial. He just flat out pled that he was sentenced to life, pled guilty in June of last year. What you haven't heard about him was, what you haven't heard from him was he had 5 additional attacks already set to go. Two days later at Rockefeller Center, another car bomb, going to go into Rockefeller Center. He was arrested at the airport inside his car that was parked. He had a rifle inside that auto. And again, from a law enforcement perspective, these guys hate us. They want to kill you. And if he's going to go down, he's going to take somebody out with him. So he left the car, he left his rifle, went into the airport, and that's where he ended up being apprehended. Last week, did you hear about these two clients, as I used to say, but these two animals, grenades, ammunition, rifles, they wanted to bomb a synagogue. They were just arrested literally on May 13th. Their trials are going to go on. You ever hear back in 2007, Russell DeFreitas, this guy wanted to blow up JFK Airport. He had the schematics and plans of the major tanks where they stored the jet fuel. He was convicted in August of last year, sentenced to life. Now, Abul Zazai, Afghan native, arrested. He was going to blow up the New York City transit system. Outside of New York, we can't forget, here we had an Army major ends up killing 13, wounding 30, Fort Hood, Texas. Richard Reed, shoe bomber, American Airlines, Paris to Miami, putting C-10 in the sole of his foot. It didn't ignite. And I know you guys are familiar with this guy, Farouk Abdulmutallab. He came in from Amsterdam on his way to Detroit with a bomb in his underwear. This is what I'm afraid is going to end up hitting us down the road. And obviously it's a woman up there because suicide bombers come in all shapes, size, ages, gender. Male, female, children, doesn't matter. They are brought up to be a martyr. When they kill Americans, when they kill Westerners, they have parties and celebrations in their homeland. It's documented. I have other videos if you ever want to see them down the road. But bottom line is, I'll show you shortly how we rejoiced in Manhattan when Obama, when President Obama came out and said that bin Laden was killed. They were partying in the streets. It's the same thing in the other world. They party when they do an attack on us. The suicide bombers, as much intel, as much police presence, as much of what we have everywhere, you can't stop everybody. They're going to dress just like you and I do. You're not going to know who the hell they are. They're going to walk into a public facility, wherever there's mass population, could be a transit facility, could be a school, could be a church, could be wherever. I don't think they're going to go after the high targets because it's very highly protected, highly sensitive. They're going to go after the softer targets, and they're probably going to do it simultaneously across the United States. I mean, West Coast, East Coast, Midwest, so forth and so on. We pray and hope that it doesn't come our way, but you really can't. Picture speaks a thousand words. I mentioned to you about that evil word, money, before. And through the years, and I'm curious to find out Tim's take on this later on today, ground zero, to me back then, was sacred ground. And as time went by, when I used to go down there, obviously I'm still a cop, when I used to go down there, the commercialism of it really put a sour taste in my mouth. Vendors peddling off, Twin Tower statues and all this other stuff, and finally it turned me off where I would only go back down there during the late tour. I'd go there, it's nice, quiet, you look, you reminisce, say a quick prayer, and then off I go. And I haven't been down there in quite a while because now they have started construction. But the day after we found out that bin Laden was killed, coincidentally, I had to do a lecture in Manhattan. So I went early to go down to Ground Zero. And at that point, I knew I was coming here, so I figured I wanted to take some pictures of Ground Zero as it is virtually today. The pictures are, again, from May 2nd. And as soon as I got up out of the subway, I saw a couple of friends of mine and stuff like that. So we start BSing. And here's some of the pictures. The press corps took up blocks. Notice I say blocks. This scene was up and down blocks within the city. It's a media circus, a media event. And they interview people from all walks of life. They interview people that, you know, this guy probably here was in, you know, middle school back then. Here's an example of the amount of satellite trucks that will pop up within a matter of hours. The media, and now getting into some of the buildings here. These are some of the towers that are in construction as we speak. And I'm going to get into the specifics of these towers and what's planned and where they're at in a few moments. But just to give you a perspective of what it looks like today. Key thing, everything's being watched. Every construction worker that goes in here now has to get, it's similar to the fingerprints, but it's the live scan, and they're talking about iris identification and so forth and so on, but it's still very secure. And I stopped and took a picture of this woman. And when she finished, I kind of told her, you know, forgive me, but I don't know you. You don't know me. But I just wanted to tell you thank you. And she looked at me and gave me a bumper sticker, proud to be an American. And she came down and left some flowers, said a little prayer. She reminded me, and she had to be one of the ones that came down by the thousands at the time of this homicide, came down by the thousands to lay wreaths, donate food, to say hello to us, to clap for us as we left the site every night. They lined the streets with signs and all this other stuff. But 8 months later, they're back to giving it a bird there again. But bottom line, I was copying. kind of happy to see her there. She was the only one. And again with the media. Tower One, this is what's on the, this is what's being done as we speak. These are the final plans. This is also going to be known as the Freedom Tower. It's going to be completed in quarter four of 2013. It will be America's tallest building at 104 floors. It will have over 2.6 million square feet of office space. They're up. The steel is up to the 64th floor, concrete up to the 57th, and I hate mentioning money, $3.1 billion for this building. Two and three, unknown completion dates. Both foundations are complete. Number two is going to be retail and transportation. Number three is going to be 71 stories, 2.2 feet of office and retail space. Number four is going to be finished in 2013. This is on the southeast corner of the plaza. 2.3 million square feet of office retail, 64 stories, 24 floors out of the 64 are complete, $1.6 billion. Seven World Trade Center. This is back open in 2006, 52 stories, 1.7 million square feet, more than 90% is leased, $1.37 billion. Transportation Hub, 2014. Underground connection to the World Financial Center, cost $3.44 billion. A lot of people don't recall, but 10 years ago, World Trade Center had a city within a city below the Trade Center. 150,000 people use that transportation hub on a daily basis. 150,000 every day. This took years to get finally approved for construction. This is going to end up being the Memorial Plaza and the museum. And the key components on here is the two footprints of the two towers that we lost. The museum, they're going to plant close to 200 trees. There's going to be waterfalls, the reflecting ponds with waterfalls. The plaza is going to open up on this September. The pools are there already. The museum is follows the year later. And bottom line is for the memorial site, $760 million. Yes, sir, please.
I have a
question. Go ahead, Augie.
Has there been a lot of research on the viability of businesses wanting to occupy that retail space?
You know, there has, and they're going to try their best, obviously. They didn't want to lay this money out without businesses coming in. As I said, in that one, they got 90% already full. And that was good. But the other ones, I couldn't tell you how well they're doing with it, but supposedly they're doing okay. NYPD is going to open up a new precinct down there. They're going to change jurisdiction. The Port Authority Police Department handled the site prior. They're in charge of it. Matter of fact, their station, their precinct, was on site. That's why they lost 37 members that morning. NYPD is going to take it over. Port Authority is going to take over the transportation hub that will be beneath it. But bottom line is they're going to have 673 cops on this site, well, assigned to the command to work the site. It'll be the largest police precinct. It's going to cover over 16 acres, $30 million per year. Health Department started releasing some stats, and Tim told you the terrible stats from the fire department. Notice down here is that report's not coming out, and Tim gave you some really good insight on when it does come out. So that's the reasons our numbers don't jive right now. But for cancer death, 345, 39 cops. All in all, that's where we're at. I don't have much more to show you at the site. It is a construction site right now. I hope I gave you some perspective on it. And right now I'm going to be closing it out. And what I'd like to do is just a little tribute. And again, my heart goes out to Tim and his brother firefighters. And but from a cop's perspective again, just going to give you a little insight. To don't look at a number, 23 NYPD. You're a cop. You're not a badge number. You're not a Social Security number. You're not a tax number. Somebody out there loves you, whether it's your wife, your kid, your parents, whatever it is. You're a person. And these guys, their families are ruined forever. They're gone forever. And I just don't want anyone to forget what was sacrificed that morning of. And more important, this weekend's Memorial Day. Please, please don't forget about our servicemen and women through the years that have died for us, that have been injured, that have no legs, they have no arms, and they're thanking TIG on behalf of POM and you guys for donating money to them, money and goodie bags, DVDs and DVRs. They're saying to TIG, he told me that story yesterday, I almost put tears in my eyes, they're saying, thank you. Thank you, police officers, for remembering me. Don't forget these people. You shouldn't ever forget them on every day. And I never was in the armed services. But I tell you, since 9/11, I travel on the airports twice a month. Every time I go through the airports, when I see somebody in military garb, I always stop them and I always say, thank you for your service. 9 out of 10 will say, thank you very much, and someone else will give you that look, but just wanted to say thank you.
Just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, there ain't no doubt I love this land.
If you don't get anything about what Tim and I said today, just remember what's down here. Never forget, never surrender. Questions about anything? I will be at the bar there tonight. Feel free. I thank you for giving me an hour and a half of your time here today. Tig, thank you again for inviting me here. It means a lot to me to come here to speak to groups like yourselves. Please be safe in your jobs when you go back, whenever you return, Monday or Friday, whenever you go back. Worry always about your safety. You always want to go home to your loved ones. Don't ever forget that. And if I can do anything for anybody down the road, if I don't know the answer, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I got a lot of friends that are very knowledgeable. I can probably find out anything you need to know. Give me a call. Thank you very, very much.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the POAM Podcast Radio Show. I want to remind you that each and every month you can find every single podcast online on Apple iTunes. Just search for POAM. They're also available for download or for live listen on our website. Visit us at POAM.net. Get on our newsletter and send us all of your comments and suggestions for future shows.